AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, man. Welcome back. Episode 32, In the Jar with your boy, Dupree. Your favorite pundit's favorite pundit, baby. Yeah, I just call myself that. This week, we going into the clips. We're going in heavy. We're in week 3, week 4 of training camp. We got some reps from training camp. We got some preseason reps. We're covering the hottest clips of every week here on In the Jar. And I ain't got the bankroll to show y'all a nice buttoned up recap of the episode like I'd like to. So y'all just gonna have to take my word on it. Okay. We got a hell of an episode this week. Come on down, take you a seat. Welcome to In the Jar. We're a friendly face, ain't far. Get yourself a cigar or whatever you like, refreshment. Pin them shoulders back. Take a deep breath. And immerse yourself in the land of what is right here on this program. We got a great episode. Like, comment, subscribe. It helps the channel a lot. Helps it a lot. So hit that like button. Comment what you think. Subscribe to the channel. Ding! I'm going to have my editor Luke throw a little damn infographic on there. Bing! With the little bell, you know what I'm saying? Subscribe to the channel! Damn it! Alright, we're gonna get into episode 32. I love y'all. Let's have ourselves a week. Sit down, enjoy. Yeah, I got a F1 trillion limousine. Yeah, I do. Damn, boy. That's the worst I've sang that hook the whole damn week, my friend. We got that new Post Malone. A new Post Malone out here with the new album, the new country album, brother. And it's a banger. It's a real deal certified banger over there. F1 Trillion Limousine. Yeah, I do. Hey, that's how you hit that right there, baby boy. This is In the Jar, episode 32, with your favorite dumbass, your boy Dupe. Let's get right into it right here, right now. Let's see. We're a little amped up on the Zens today, baby. Yeah. What's the first clip?
I saw.
Damn.
Bruh, he's up there, man.
Damn. He smacked that jumper, didn't he? I tell you what, man, it's hot as hell in here, boy. And I got damn COVID, so I stink right now. Let me tell you that right here. I stink. But, man, training camp, that's the time of year we're in. We've been in it for the last 3 weeks or so, something like that. And the main thing, Ole Miss did this beautifully, by the way, playing basketball at a team meeting, setting up the hoop, getting the whole team gassing everybody up, coaches versus players, I'd imagine. I think I saw a little bit of gray on your boy's chinny chin chin that drained that jumper, that step back, you know what I'm saying? But with camp, man, camp sucks so bad, and it's good and bad in that way, because
obviously it sucks. It's bad. But on the good side of things, with training camp, it's good because the hard times help you bond with your boys. It helps you build something with your team that wouldn't be there if camp wasn't a thing. And I think a really important part of camp, at least on the coach's end, is to – let me turn my mic up a little bit. Yeah, I wanted to wear the damn cowboy hat today, so we're going no headphones. But what I was saying, this is what Ole Miss did beautifully here. Training camp sucks. And yes, shitty times will bring you and the boys together, and you and the boys being bonded in that way is very instrumental for long-term team success throughout the season. But as a coach, you got to sprinkle in the fun little moments like Ole Miss did, hooping around in the damn team meet room in front of the whole team. Everybody's chanting, defense, defense. And it's like, you need those times. I remember one time, man, at Samford University, it was like the third or fourth week of camp. I mean, we were in the thick of it. We were about where teams are right now, right? It was in the thick of it. It was dark before the dawn, right before the season. Everybody's pissing and moaning. Everybody's sore. Everybody's mentally worn out. Everybody's short on sleep. And I remember we had a different coach kind of come up and give a motivational speech in the afternoon each day. And we had a coach, he was our running backs coach at the time, by the name of Derek Foster. And I think he's with the Chargers now. We had a lot of players, coaches go on to the NFL. It was a crazy time being in an FCS program like that. But Coach Foster came up there. I can't remember a word he said. It was about toughness and pushing through, something like that. And then he got real razzed up as his speech progressed, right? And he got to the end of the speech. He's like, and that's all I got. And at the time, we had a video coordinator named Rocky Sabatini. I think he follows the show. And he finished where he said, and this, that, and that, and the other, and this, that. And then he crossed it. He goes, I fucked it up. But he finishes his speech, and he goes, hit it, Rock. And set it off by Boosie Badass played. As a young white man, it was my first time hearing that song, Set It Off by Boosie Badass. Yeah, we finna set it off. You heard me? I'm finna put you in the trash bag. You know what I'm saying? Tired of all these knowing me right now, for real. You wanna talk shit? You wanna run your mouth? You want some gangster strut your mother in the house? We'll set this job. Yeah. And that was my first time hearing Set It Off. And everybody popped up, woo! You know, got around him and shit, you know, got hype. And that was one of those fun moments, man. That's kind of what that Ole Miss basketball reminded me of, man. It's just the coach, as a coach, you got to remember it ain't going to be all fun in a football program. In fact, it's probably going to be majority not fun if you want to get to where you want to go. But you got to implement some of those fun moments.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Into camp in order for the boys to really remember, hey, this is why we come back. This is why we show up and grind 98% of the time, 99% of the time. It's those little moments. Play that one more time until he hits his shot, and then we'll cut it off. Eesh. Yeah. Yeah, everybody's hype. It's a good time, man. That's a clip that came up on my Instagram feed. In fact, I had a buddy send that to me. Shout out John Lee York sent that to me. Good ass times, man. It makes you reminisce. Those are the moments that you look back as a former football player and you say to yourself, damn, that's what I miss. That's what I miss. That's the locker room. When you ask a football player, what do you miss most about playing? And he says the locker room. That's moments like that is what he's talking about. It's just the boys, just vibes, you know, nothing crazy. But that was a good one. You know, that's a good one to start the show off with. What do we got next? Okay, so little pre-context. I wasn't surprised at all to see the clip y'all are about to see. Okay, it's a joint practice between the New York Jets and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Aaron Rodgers is so seasoned that he was able to see a guy walking up and know he wasn't blitzing. Here it is.
You're not coming back up. We need
You're not coming back up. Can you imagine, bro? And then he snaps the ball and 34 promptly gets out. You know what I mean? It'd be one thing if he was wrong, but Aaron Rodgers, he's been in the game for 20 plus years. He ain't going to be wrong. His own teammates have said that Aaron Rodgers is like having a coach on the field. Can you imagine how unique that is? What kind of superpower that is as a team? I pray to God that Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, and I think he will. I think he knows how to take care of himself. He's probably just as seasoned in taking care of himself as he is doing all the other stuff. But stuff happens, you know. I think the Jets will be in contention, if not NFC East winners, if Aaron Rodgers is there through January, healthy, ready to go each week. And they got to keep the pressure off of him, right? You got to protect your assets. That's why he's wearing a red jersey in damn practice, because ain't nobody going to touch Aaron Rodgers. Ain't nobody going to touch Joe Burrow. Ain't nobody going to touch Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson in damn preseason, because those are the most valuable assets in the NFL organization. I think Joe Burrow's payroll alone, one guy on a whole 53-man roster, and then you add up what you're paying some of these guys that aren't going to make the team. I think Joe Burrow is like at least 3% of the entire Bengals cap. That's a figure that I don't factually know. It's just going off of memory. But something in that range, 1% to 5%. I know that for a fact. So it's like, look, Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, and he's getting in guys' heads like that. 34 for Tampa Bay that was walking up, I would imagine, is a guy that is trying to make the team. And football is that way, right? It's like anything else in life, which is what makes it beautiful. Guys that are there trying to prove themselves, you're going to get knocked down by a guy that's mentally, I mean, by a guy that's been there before. You know, he probably, 34, probably saw this clip going viral and was like, ah, shit, he got my ass. But what can you do, you know, other than be in the league for 20 years and have a pristine career, MVPs, Super Bowls? You can't say anything back to Aaron Rodgers as a young guy trying to make the team, you know? So that clip just shows how seasoned he is, how much he understands. Really, if you think about it, a quarterback, the reps that Aaron Rodgers has behind him is a lot about assessing a linebacker's body language in terms of deciding whether they're going to walk up and actually blitz or walk up and get out like this guy did. I just got a text message. Let's go on D&D. Do not disturb my ass. Beat. All right. But, no, that's the thing. Like, I think quarterbacks that have been in the league, they have a long time, obviously have a lot of advantages. But the main advantage that these quarterbacks have, in my opinion, at least in terms of reading defenses, is being able to see a guy's body language, a linebacker's body language, walking up and know, like, okay, this guy's serious about blitzing or he ain't blitzing. He's just trying to show it. And so I think that was an exemplary example put on by Aaron Rodgers there of how important it is to be able to assess body language, not just in football, but in life. You know what I'm saying? In life, if you're able to see if a guy's walking up ready to blitz on you, what you gonna do about it? You say, oh no, you ain't blitzing. You just bluffing. You just bluffing. The new Madden game came out, and I get frustrated with Madden. It's a fine game. They've made a lot of improvements to the game. But when you try to have linebackers show blitz in Madden, it's kind of useless. Sometimes it helps. Like, I was playing a game last night where I had a double mug nickel look. I was playing as the Bengals against the Bills. I had a double mug nickel and, two linebackers in each A-gap. And I noticed the fella playing against me online, he started to check a bunch. He started to check. And I was like, okay, this is working out. This is working out. But then he runs a play, and my linebackers are nowhere to be found. He hits a guy in the middle for a first down. So it's like, dude, come on, dude. Let's get out of that double mug a little quicker. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. It seems like in Madden, it's very – and I'm sure they'll have patches and game updates that improve the game. It just came out. That happened with NCAA 25 where the game came out. 2 weeks went by. They patched it and fixed a lot of things. So I'm sure that'll happen with Madden. But Madden seems like a very offense-oriented game right now. It seems like the CPUs on defense are kind of in no man's land if you ain't playing as the guy. You know, and you can't play as more than one player on an 11-man defense in a football video game, at least to my knowledge. So it's like, if you don't pick the exact right guy to where the play is going and you're not there at the exact right time, I'm not the best tackler on Madden. I will say that to the grave. I ain't the best tackler. It's kind of embarrassing coming from a former player on defense. But I can't be, you know, nobody can be the other 10 guys. So I feel like Madden – and really all football video games, it's just about making the perfect calls as much as you can so that your CPU is in position to get there and just make a dump.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
I'm dummy tackle. You know what I mean? Because otherwise, at least on Madden 25 so far, these damn CPU defensive guys, if I'm not able to switch the player and get there automatically, you know, they might be sitting in mud for a hot second. So that was kind of a tangent there. But we'll get to the next clip after I take a sip here. So there was a guy that I guess has participated in flag football on a big scale, at least Olympically, if that's even a word. His name is Darnell something. I can't remember his name, but this guy plays quarterback for some type of widespread flag football organization. He's 5'8", 140 pounds, soaking wet. And here's what he's coming out and saying about potentially pro guys coming in and participating. I'm talking NFL guys participating on the 2028 Olympic flag football team in Los Angeles. Here's a clip.
At the end of the day, I feel like I'm better than Patrick Mahomes because of my IQ of the game. I know he's
of what?
Right now the best in the league. I know he's more accurate. I know he has all these intangibles. But when it comes to flag football, I feel like I know more than him.
How, bro? How? I feel like that's like saying, I don't know, man. I don't think that this guy is saying these things for the right reasons. You know what I'm saying? I think he knew that I think he had an aha moment, this guy. I can't remember his name. I think he had an aha moment, this flag football quarterback, where he said to himself, oh, shit. If I come out and say that all the pro quarterbacks are trash at flag football and I'm better than them, I'm going to get a lot of clicks. And he was right. He was right. But he's getting a lot of hate. A lot of hate. The haters and losers are in the Instagram comments saying, yeah, bro, go Go snag me a Gatorade, bro. Go get Patrick's water, bro.
And they're right. Because there's no way that the 2028 Olympics roll around and guys like Mahomes, if they want to participate, guys like Jalen Hurts, if they want to participate, guys like Tyreek Hill, if they want to participate, ain't going to get the call to go play for the USA flag football team. I don't care if it's tackle or not. Football. They are the best football players in the world. And to say that I'm better because I play flag football, I just don't. I don't jive with it. I feel like my man's trying to get some clicks. And he succeeded. But he's probably having a bit of a damn mental health crisis at all the hate he's getting. Because let me tell you, it's a different feeling when you got haters. It's a different feeling. Sometimes it shows you're doing something right. Sometimes it shows you that, hey, maybe we need to backtrack and think about what we said next time. Because that ain't on base, brother. That ain't on base. You're not going to tell me a 5'8", 140-pound flag football quarterback is going to be chosen in the 2028 Olympics to be representing the United States over Patrick Mahomes if he wants to participate, bro. Come on, man. I can't come up with the word. It's incorrigible. I'm trying to be Stephen A. Smith. It's flat out blasphemous. You know what I'm saying? So, anyway. All right, next deal. So, this was revealed to me earlier. I think this clip's a week or two old, but apparently the NFL is using new technology. They've taken out the chain gang. They're using a lot of different innovations that are being implemented this year. We're talking new kickoff. We're talking new first down measurement system. There ain't no more chain gang anymore, and that kind of breaks my heart. But here's a clip. I think it's a preseason game between the Lions and the New York Giants. Here it is.
Bobble it, yes. But bobbling it brought him behind the line. Now, Dan Campbell, it paid off. Didn't work out so well for former Chargers head coach Brandon Staley. You know, we just run the chains out.
Yeah, he's like, well, he can't believe it's more than just maybe a couple inches.
All right, so I guess that's on the Jumbotron there, and I don't know how they're able to do this. Here's the thing with the NFL. It's not just Roger Goodell making these decisions. There's a lot of folks that are putting time and effort into innovating the game, and I think it's great for the game, but you know, what would the old heads think about this? What would Jack Lambert think about these things? The new kickoff, you know, it kind of seems like some arena football shit. You know what I'm saying? The new kickoff, I mean, hell, even in Madden, that damn kickoff pisses me off, bro, because if the guy finds, they got no, the kickoff team, they got no momentum, and if the return guy finds one seam, he's out to the 40. And so we'll probably see over the course of the season if the new kickoff equates to more returns. Could it be a problem as the season progresses, and could they backtrack on it? I would guess maybe. Is the new kickoff in the NFL a problem? Will it become a problem? We'll see over the course of the season with field position getting maxed out and teams scoring way more. Kickoff's important, man. You know, I think people are underestimating how much this new kickoff could change the game in favor of the offense. People have complained about that a lot in the past. I think even Tom Brady has said that the NFL has been very offense biased, and that might be the reason that Madden's offense biased. You know what I'm saying? Maybe they make it as realistic as they possibly can. But I would argue that the new kickoff is going to alter the NFL game to where offense starts out in better field position. Offense scores more as a result of being in better field position. Defenses obviously give up more points. Production on defense suffers. Efficiency on defense suffers. Because if the new kickoff does what I think it's going to do, it's going to alter the flipping of the field to some degree in regards to special teams. People forget how important the third phase of the game is, special teams. And the new kickoff might change that. But nonetheless, I think the new first down marker is cool. It's laser technology to measure first downs, and I'm sure they'll get a lot more calls right. I remember there's one clip I saw. We probably showed it on the show here before, but that big hit by Jadeveon Clowney in that bowl game against Michigan happened right after a ref literally, like, the ball's here. Y'all can't even see it. The ball's here. The measuring stick was there. The ref calls a first down. And Steve Spurrier, who is the head coach of South Carolina at times, down in the ref's face, like, what? What? And then Jadeveon Clowney, pure ball don't lie moment, comes out the very next play, pops the running back, gets a fumble back, South Carolina ball. So I think the first down marker will help. I went on a tangent about the kickoff there because it's standing out to me in Madden. It's standing out to me. A lot of guys, I don't know if my return team, if the Bengals return team, that's who I've been playing with on Madden, ain't where it's supposed to be ratings-wise on Madden, but I've been having a lot of guys run the ball out to the 40-yard line, and that's a lot different than the damn 25, you know, a guy letting the ball jump out of the end zone. And back in the day, I'm talking a few years ago, back in the day, touchback was to the 20. So you're saying – What's 20 divided by 100? That's a fifth of the football field you're given all of a sudden if a returner is able to get it out to the 40 consistently. What's the next deal? Okay. So I saw this little clip of news. This is from the Adam Schefter podcast. This was concerning to me. Okay. Adam Schefter had Chad Ochocinco legally on Adam Schefter's show, and I was not aware of this, but apparently there's a really weird situation going on in Cincinnati about whether Ja'Marr Chase should be paid before the start of the season or whether they're going to put it off. Bengals owner Mike Brown has made it clear that he wants to put it off until after the season to pay Ja'Marr Chase. Obviously, it's Cincinnati sports. Cincinnati teams don't want to pay guys. We're small market. I get it. But you got a guy like Ja'Marr Chase who's scoring 2-3 touchdowns every online head-to-head match for your boy Duke Dog. And it's like, you got to pay him. So that part didn't surprise me. But what did surprise me was what Chad Johnson said. He said, if Ja'Marr Chase doesn't have a deal by week one, this is Adam Schefter asking this. If Ja'Marr Chase doesn't have a deal done by week one, you don't think he's playing? And Chad said, no, absolutely not. He's not touching the field. And Chad went on to say that if it was him, he would let the love of the game trump business. He would play anyway. But it's different for these guys these days. These guys are thinking about business first, and they should be. But Chad said, if I'm thinking about business first, I ain't touching the field until they pay me. I think it's a pretty good leverage strategy if you think about it, because that's really going to hurt the Bengals if Ja'Marr Chase isn't on the field due to not paying him. He's going to have to be one of the, if not the highest, Ja'Marr Chase is going to be or have to be the most highest paid non-quarterback in the league, if not one of them. I think he deserves as much money as C.D. Lamb's asking for. I think he deserves as much money as Justin Jefferson got. And you're seeing the amount that guys are getting paid going higher and higher, the league's cash flowing more and more, the game's growing faster and faster. And so I would be remiss to say that Ja'Marr Chase doesn't have every right to not touch the field until he's the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL. That's just where I'm coming from. It's not the fact that I'm a Bengals fan and I'm biased. I want to see him play. But golly, Mike Brown, pay the man. Pay the man. You know what I'm saying? Pay him. Get him on the field. He's the best receiver in the damn league to me. What's the next deal? All right. This is another interesting clip from a podcast that stuck out to me. Tua Tagovailoa came out and talked about his relationship with Brian Flores as opposed to his relationship with current Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel. Here's the quote. If you woke up every morning and I told you that you suck at what you did, that you don't belong, then someone comes and tells you you're the best fit for this, how would it make you feel? Damn, bro. I think it's safe to say there's a reason why Brian Flores might not have a head coaching job after seeing this. It ain't about diversity. It ain't about none of that hoo-ha. It's about who can coach guys the best. And part of coaching guys well is about feeling out each player. Some guys might need to be motivated that way. At some points in my life, I needed to be motivated like Brian Flores motivated Tua Tagovailoa. Someone just telling me, bro, you suck, bro. Prove me wrong, bro. You suck. And that, for me, as a linebacker, if a coach told me I sucked, I would want to run through a brick wall and destroy whatever's in front of me to prove your dumbass wrong. But I will say it helps from a production standpoint with guys like me, but long term, it's not a sustainable deal because at some point as a coach, you got to have a real relationship with a player. If you're talking to your players like that constantly, it's not going to build a real relationship. It's going to build a relationship of fear, if anything. And fear can get you somewhere, but fear is not going to get you everywhere. You know what I mean? And so I think Tua is probably the kind of player that doesn't respond to that kind of motivation. I think that's number one. Brian Flores Brian Flores needed to feel that situation out and adjust his coaching accordingly. But also, I think there's a time and place. I think there's different kinds of guys. And I think there's probably guys that Mike McDaniel will talk to like that every now and then. Maybe I'm wrong. I could very well be wrong. But Mike McDaniel seems like the reassuring type, the dude that says, hey, come on, you the shit now, but don't get complacent. You know what I mean? There's just different. It's an art, coaching, just like anything else that provides immense value. You know what I mean? A head coach provides immense value for an organization. And in order to provide immense value for an organization to do your job effectively, you have to master the art. That means making mistakes and learning from them. That means knowing how to deal with different types of guys, being able to not just understand their personality, but apply your knowledge of how to coach to that particular personality. That's why it ain't a science. If it were a science, we'd have a book written about head coaching in the NFL and how to do it step by step. But no, what makes it an art is the lack of definition on how to do that. That's what makes it beautiful. Just like any other craft, coaching requires this unspoken sixth sense to be able to feel out each guy's personality, to be able to deeply understand each of the 53 men that are on your roster and be able to apply your knowledge of coaching accordingly to each and every personality and dynamically shift it as each guy's personality progresses, right? You might have to treat a young promising rookie, different than when that guy's in his fifth year as a veteran and a proven guy, a paid guy, a made guy. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think Brian Flores is a bad coach. I think, and I've talked about this some recently, I think some guys are just better fit to be coordinators, or better fit to be deeper into the X's and O's, because some people just aren't blessed with the talent of being able to deeply understand personalities and applying their knowledge of coaching to each and every different personality. I've dealt with coaches like that before, where they treat every guy the same. And there's merit to that too, because then no one other guy feels like he's above the law. But I'm a guy that thinks that, especially at the highest level, as a football coach, you have to be able to shift and jive with whatever's going on, the energy in the building, the different personalities, how the two mesh, how the two blend, and be able to set your own tone so that everybody knows you're the head honcho, but they also know that they can come to you and they say, hey, man, I ain't playing too well this week. My wife kicked me out of the house. Okay. We got a relationship. You're being vulnerable with me. I don't think Tua would feel like he could be vulnerable with Brian Flores, but I damn sure would bet that he would be able to be vulnerable with Mike McDaniels. And when you have a good relationship like that, you bring the best out of your guys. So maybe the Dolphins can get a playoff push this year. Next deal. All right, so while we're on the topic of coaching, Warren Sapp is on Deion Sanders' staff at Colorado, and this is what he has to say about his newfound love for coaching.
For someone that never wanted to do this, I am really addicted to it right now. The Babies are really giving me a purpose in life, and I'm enjoying it. When me and Prime was first talking about it, and it never dawned on me until the Babies got to me. When I was in the hot tub,
the Babies,
get my hip right, just to work with them a little bit, it flooded me. And they were reaching and grabbing and asking questions. And I've worked with pros that'll get my phone number and tell me they're coming to Miami, and my house is a mile and a half from where they work out, and they'll never call. These kids called me 5:30 in the morning. Coach, you gonna come watch tape with me? It's crazy. I'm like, yeah, give me a purpose to get off to the couch. I mean, trust me.
I'll tell you what, man. I look forward to the day when I have sons that play ball. Because I'm sure, not just on the football side, but on the life side. Like Warren Sapp said, these kids are giving him a reason to get up off the couch. You know, Warren Sapp's a made man. He's a Hall of Famer. He's got money to last him for generations, I'd imagine. And so it sounds like he needed something to get his butt off the couch, some kind of newfound sense of purpose. And I don't think Warren Sapp would have answered anyone's call to come coach other than Coach Prime. And so I don't know. I think it's a beautiful thing, man. I haven't entered the phase of my life where I coach kids or feel responsible for any children. I don't have any children out there, football players or not. But it seems like a beautiful thing. On the surface, it feels like an obligation. But when you get into it, it gets you up off the couch, man. It's a beautiful thing. So look out for them boys in Colorado. I know everybody says that, and they definitely disappointed last year, but they're going to have many more eyes on them again this year as guys like Shadir Sanders, Travis Hunter are still in the mix. But I thought that was a beautiful thing, Warren Sapp, calling them babies, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, man, that's about all I have to say about that. Next deal, Manti Te'o. I don't know where this came from. I've seen this clip a couple times the last week or so. Was talking about an old memory of when he and the boys played Bama. I believe it was in the national championship game back in the early 2010s.
Thank you for bringing up a very dark moment in my history. I do remember this. We were playing at the Hard Rock Cafe Stadium, Miami Dolphins Stadium. For people that don't know anything about that stadium, there's only one tunnel. So both teams come out of the tunnel. We were the number one ranked team in the country that year, so we're the home team. Mm-hmm. We came out of our locker room first. Mm-hmm. Alabama hadn't come out of their locker room yet. So everybody stopped us at the tunnel and said, hey, you have to wait. You have to wait until Alabama comes out. Wow. So I'm one of the captains. I'm in front of all my guys. Alabama hasn't come out yet. My guys are hyped. They're loud. They're doing their thing, right? And I have when I'm in game day mode, I see things, but I don't. I'm kind of just in my own little zone. Alabama's locker room door opens, and they start running out, right? And they're going out, and I do remember this very vividly. My soon-to-be teammate, DJ Fluker, and Chance Warmack come running out of the locker room with their jerseys
tucked underneath.
No, it's up. Uh-oh. Their big bellies are out.
Oh.
And they have their fours up. And I remember DJ going by and saying, womp, 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 womp. And I remember vividly remembering the silence behind me. And I kind of glanced back at my teammates, and the eyes on them were so large, I knew at that time, I was like, all right, this is going to be a long day.
Oh, no.
To my guys' credit, they never flinched. But let me tell you guys, when we played the Alabama team in 2013, there was a difference. There was a difference with those Bama boys, so I'll say that.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to make a bang with this. Huh? What?
All right, I'm going to cut that. Don't want to trigger the old copyright on YouTube, baby. I would love to see that. That was a part of the clip I ain't seen yet. But damn, bro, the intimidation factor is real in football. The intimidation factor is something that I experienced ever since I was a little kid. I remember, I think I was maybe 11 years old. Been playing football for like 3-4 years at that point. And there was this team in our league. They were a new team. It was Pop Warner football. I remember my parents put me in this Mormon, this league that was created by Mormons. And the reason that's important is because most Pop Warner football games were played on Sundays. But in our league, we played on Saturdays. And so when I was 8, 9, 10, you know, a lot of the teams in the league, a lot of white kids, well off. You know, I think my parents wanted to protect me. I wish they had put me in a more ghetto league. Maybe I would have gotten rougher and tougher a little quicker. But nonetheless, there was this new team when I was 11 years old called the Blackbirds. And they were black. And they were, and it was a different deal. You know what I'm saying? These ghetto kids, they played football different, especially when we were kids. They had something in their brain that hadn't quite clicked in my brain yet, how to hit people, how to really make folks scared. You know what I'm saying? And they had these big kids. And I remember my dad would always say when my team was the Tide, when the Tide would play the Blackbirds, everybody on the Tide would just kind of be like this. Before the game even started, because we knew they were about to smoke us. And boys were a little different. Boys were a little grittier. Boys were a little rougher, a little tougher. You know what I'm saying? I remember the first time I learned how to really hit, or really the first time I lost my fear of hitting, was when I was 11 and I was on punt team and we punted. I'm running down to go get the punt returner. We're all 11, okay? So most of us, we ain't learned how to really smoke fools yet. Guys on the other side had. And I remember running down to chase the punt returner, and my boys are alongside me. And one by one, I just hear it get picked off, picked off. And the more guys around me that keep getting ear-holed, picked off, by these young ghetto kids, quite frankly, the more fear got instilled in my heart in real time as I'm running down the field trying to learn how to take out a punt returner. Finally, I got smoked. Bang! I'm on the ground. I'm looking face up. I'm 11 years old. I wanted to cry for a split second. And then I was kind of like, that was cool. and something clicked in me. But with those kids, it clicked a little earlier. And I feel like that's a progression that happens long beyond 11 years old. It's obvious that something was clicking in those Bama boys when they played Notre Dame in that 2013 national championship game that maybe hadn't clicked with all the Notre Dame fellas. And I think it is comfortability with hard times. And I think that those young 11-year-old Blackbirds had probably seen more shit than my white shelter ass had. You know what I'm saying? And for that reason, their propensity to go to war was much better at 11 years old. So that's what that reminded me of. Manti Te'o with Alabama. Manti Te'o and his teammates, rather, before the game against Alabama, is just kind of like the Tide and the Blackbirds. It's funny that we were the Tide and that we were on the opposite end of the spectrum as kids, but it's like Manti Te'o, Notre Dame with Alabama, same as the Tide and the Blackbirds. They see him come out and he's, fuck, dude, fuck. You know what I'm saying? All right, next deal. This is a sentimental one for me. One of my favorite baseball players of all time, Joey Votto, retired from baseball. He posted this on his Instagram.
That's it. I'm done. I am officially retired from baseball.
Say it ain't so, Joe. Come on, Joey. Come on, bro. Don't retire on me like that. I saw somewhere, I think it was a Reds Twitter account, that said Joey Votto made a public statement, and he said, man, I just suck. I'm too old. I'm not good enough. And I think it's a blessing to go out of any game, any professional sport on your own terms. I think it's a blessing. I think Joey Votto knows that. I think that's why he went ahead and grabbed the bull by the horns. It might have been a little too late, as he hadn't played in the big leagues this season. He's been in the minors, kind of making it, trying to make it work with the Blue Jays. And he's finally done. And he's one of the greatest players in Cincinnati Reds history. Joey Votto, I can't thank you enough. I hope one day you see this, brother. Joey Votto, I cannot thank you enough for the contribution that you made to the city of Cincinnati. One of the most consistent hitters in the history of baseball. His batting average was in the 300s almost every year. He came back late last season with the Reds and immediately hit like three or four bombs in the span of a weekend. I'll never forget that weekend. And the Reds, I talked about them last week, screwed the pooch, man. I had all of these clips cut of how the Reds were going to be gritty and be dogs and move on to the next week and inch closer and closer to playoff contention, and then we get swept. And we get swept bad. And it's just part of being a Cincinnati sports fan, man. You know, the Bengals have been doing their thing. There's a little bit of Bengals heartbreak the last couple of years. Last year was a year where that hurt my heart tremendously. You know, I think back to that Bengals game on the road in Pittsburgh. I think it was Christmas Eve, something like that. And I was so excited for that game. I had a big wager on the Bengals because I thought, damn, my boys are going to go in to Heinz Field. I still call it Heinz Field, not damn Acro Shore Stadium. I still call it Heinz Field. My boys are going to go into Heinz Field and beat the shit out of these boys on Christmas Eve or whenever it was, and inch closer to playoff contention, even with Jake Browning, even going under center, having 16% more explosive plays under center with Jake Browning. No, we got our ass kicked. And that's part of being a Cincinnati sports fan. You get a little bit of hope, and then you get crushed. Hopefully, that's not the narrative with the Bengals this year. I don't think it will be. That is the optimist in me talking that way. Joe Burrow, please, God, keep Joe Burrow healthy. Please, God, keep our offensive linemen healthy. Please, God, don't put us in for more heartbreak in Cincinnati. I know I'm heartbroken that Joey Votto is leaving the game of baseball. It's father time, you know what I'm saying? And father time doesn't wait for anybody. He's old. He doesn't feel like he's good enough, and I think it's a wise decision. I think Joey Votto is a wise guy, and he knows that a wise guy makes wise decisions, and I think it was a wise decision to honestly assess his output in baseball this year and say, I ain't good enough. What's the next deal? All right. Here's a clip from a joint practice. It's with the Cowboys and the Rams. Here's a clip. Damn. He ain't want no smoke, dude. That was a long clip. I thought it was going to stop. But, I mean, it fizzled out, man. You know, they took him out. It looks like he walked away. Camera that way. Walked out that way. Somebody escorted him out of the rep. But, shit, man. That coach standing back there, that was the quarterback that he was trying to get to, man. He was trying to make a play, you know. Got to be up and ready. These big, strong dogs getting back there, trying to play. You know, I think there's a lot of folks in the comments on TikTok or wherever saying, why did he do this? Well, he's such an asshole. Why did he do this? The guy was playing quarterback. The assistant coach was playing quarterback. And, of course, all the media outlets wanted to put in a caption, you know, Cowboys player shoves over assistant coach because they know it's going to get clicks. They know it's going to get that work. But, I mean, let's look at it, man. The guy's in a rep. He's trying to get back there. You know, maybe the extra shove wasn't ideal for optics. But He's trying to get back there, man. You know, I think the defensive lineman's name is Albert Huggins. Albert Huggins. And you're in camp, man. You're in joint practice. You're trying to show your stuff. I hadn't heard of him before this clip, so he might be trying to earn a spot. You got to play every rep like it's a real deal. And I think that's what he was doing. Everybody wants to get mad. Everybody wants to go into captions and say, Cowboys defensive lineman Albert Huggins shoves Rams assistant coach to the ground. That's what happened, yes. But it wasn't as egregious as folks are making it out to be. He was supposed to be the assistant coach, I mean, was acting as the quarterback. And Albert Huggins is trying to make it back to the quarterback. And on paper, he did his job. He did do his job. So I don't know where all the hate's coming from on that. I think that's bullshit. You know what I'm saying? All right. What do we got next? This is. I love this.
They're going to contain the outside, come around you, right? And get to the court, right? They ain't going to be able to do that with you right here.
Hey,
I'm going to
tell you where you messed up.
Okay. I'm going to tell you where you messed up. Look, right here, the first thing you did, you was down. The first thing you did was stood straight up.
No.
Remember, you down.
First
step. First step.
You're
the defensive end.
I ain't moving.
What's going to be your first step? Okay. See how you waddling already? You out here already, one, because you ain't got a good step. Once you get in, you driving his ass out and away so that the runner can come straight to you.
Let me tell you what you did wrong. That ain't right. Man, I wish I had a black mama like that teaching me football when I was a kid. Let me tell you what. She said, drop your ass. I ain't moving. I love that clip because whoever that is, whether that's his aunt, whether that's his mama, whether that's his grandmama, she's investing time in her grandson, her nephew, her son, teaching him game of football. And it's a beautiful thing. I was playing golf with my brother and my dad in North Carolina last week. And the unique thing about that is my brother and my dad don't play golf. They were out there because I like it. And so I think games, whether it's a damn game of Monopoly, whether it's football, whether it's golf, whether it's tennis, when you're able to connect deeper with family members that are willing to be out there, even if they ain't wholly interested, seems like, you know, old mama here is interested in the game of football. But even if she wasn't, taking time to be out there with her son, grandson, nephew is priceless. And being willing to teach him, she's invested in him being great at the game. He's got his damn helmet on. It looks like he's got the football pants on. Every which way you cut it, it's a beautiful thing. Man, I'm going to run it one more time.
They're going to contain the outside, come around you, to get to the quarterback, right? They ain't going to be able to do that with you right here. Okay, I'm going to tell you where you messed up at. Look, right here, the first thing you did, you was down. The first thing you did was stood straight up.
Boom. I did that shit.
Remember, you down. First step. You the defensive end. Come push. I ain't moving. Okay. See how you wobbling already? You out here already, one, because you ain't got a good step.
Gotta have a good base.
You driving his ass out in a way so that the runner can come straight through.
You gonna get young boy paid, baby. We had this YMCA team back when I was little, like 6 years old. And we had some teammates, and one of their mamas would come out the game. They score a touchdown. She said, that boy going to make his mama some money. She. I thought that was a beautiful thing, man. Mom and son. Mama's investing into her son through the game of football. Ain't nothing like it. It's a beautiful game. Where the hell else would you rather be? Right here. On In the Jar Podcast with your boy Dupe. Where else would you rather be? You know what I mean? Next deal.
Well, guess what? Here it is.
behind the back flip to Travis Kelce.
Ain't nobody else in the game of football, other than Patrick Mahomes, that's allowed to do a behind-the-back pass. Let me tell you. Ain't nobody got the confidence in the game of football to throw a behind-the-back pass. I don't care if it's a damn preseason game, other than Patrick Mahomes. Andy Reid had to have called Patrick Mahomes in his office and been like, how the shit did you do that? How did you do that? How did you do it? Dude, it's just ain't nothing else other than sheer confidence in your preparation, in your attitude, and in your effort to get to that moment where you're in the middle of a rep. You're in the middle of a preseason game rep, and you're rolling out. You say, all right, bang. Right there. I got my boy Kelce down there. Bang. Andy Reid had to have called him in and been like, dude, how did you do that? I've never seen that before. We've never seen that before. Behind the back pass. Run it one more time. Around the defensive guy, around the pursuer's back. If I'm a Bengals fan and that Patrick Mahomes behind the back bullshit happens in a regular season game, I'm going on suicide watch. You know what I'm saying? That shit'll piss me off. You can't even do that in a video game. Maybe Madden will put it in there. Behind the back pass, Patrick Mahomes. Behind the back pass rating, 95, 99. I don't know. But we've never seen that before. We're going to continue to see things that we've probably never seen before in the game of football, especially at the professional level. And that's living proof right there. Patrick Mahomes, behind the back pass. In a real game rep. Don't care if it's preseason. It's a real game rep. Guy pursuing him just goes right around his back. Because he knows that if he goes up top with it, the defender's probably going to throw his hands up and bat the ball down. Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes, though. He probably could have done a little dink and dunk. I don't know, man. Special rep. Special players, special plays, special teams. I don't know how that goes. What's the next deal? Ooh. Dang. What a good rep. J.J. Taylor broke one of the boys for the Giants' ankles up front. And that's a bad feeling. I can tell you. I've been there before. These guys are trying to earn a spot. It's preseason. That's why I love preseason football. You got a bunch of hungry dogs out there taking the majority of the reps, trying to earn their spot on an NFL organization. And it's not just, hey, I'm trying to earn a spot for the Texans. Hey, I'm trying to earn a spot for the Giants. Somebody might be watching film with the damn Atlanta Falcons and see that rep and say, who the hell is that? Who the hell made that play? Damn, we might have to go get him. Because there's not going to be a spot for every guy on the team, even if you have a pristine preseason. It's the NFL. It's cutthroat. It's the highest level of the game of football. So a lot of these guys are playing these reps, not necessarily to make one team, but to just make a team and make their living playing football. It's a beautiful thing. It's really scary for a lot of guys. It'd be scary as hell for me if I was ever good enough to go up to that level and try to earn a spot on a team. But it's a beautiful thing, performing under pressure, making sure that your controllables, attitude, preparation, and effort are all there. I wish I had gone by those principles in my playing days. I really did. But nonetheless, we're giving the attitude, we're giving the preparation, we're giving the effort right here on In the Jar Podcast, baby. Yes, sir. But that's the beautiful thing about preseason, man. Guys trying to earn a spot. Not just on the Texans, not just on the Giants, but anywhere in the league. Anywhere that'll pay you. Anywhere that'll help you buy a house for your mother. Anywhere that'll help you get that car you always dreamed of. Make a living playing a game that you love. It's a beautiful thing. What we got?
All right, special teams, lost your kicker. We didn't lose him. He's at Alabama.
Yeah, I understand.
We know exactly where he's at. You media people, it's all pretend. Like, no, Alabama stole our kicker. They illegally recruited our kicker and stole him from us. And, like, that's a fact. But that's God. But we act like it's not. We live in this la-la world. Like, hey, let's not talk. I don't know why. Everybody knows what's going on. So, yeah, Alabama stole our kicker.
Damn.
A couple other schools tried to steal it, but then they, okay, what's the question?
Alabama stole our kicker. This is a headline that came up, and there's no explanation behind it. There's no really reasonable explanation as to how that happened. I'd imagine that Alabama pulled that kicker away from Miami, Ohio with some bread. With the prospect of some NIL deals, with the prospect of having a better chance of going pro. How would a kid say no, even a kicker, how would a kid say no to Alabama when he's currently at Miami of Ohio? I think that coach knows that, and he's obviously bitter about it, but it's Alabama. That's the school a lot of kids dream about going to and playing at. It's Bama. How can a coach in any program be bitter about that? He was obviously a great player if the coach at Miami of Ohio is bitter about losing him and if Alabama wanted him. But, you know, it's business these days at the end of the day, man. College football is just as much of a business now than the NFL is. And I think that's a good thing. There's obviously cons to it. There's not as much authenticity in college football anymore. There's not as much program loyalty. I think Tom Brady talked about that, where he went into Michigan, a young kid, and sixth on the depth chart, and spent time in the program, developed loyalty to the program at the University of Michigan, and found his way to earn a spot. And I'm sure Tom Brady's story would be a lot different. Damn, I just spit like crazy. I feel like Tom Brady's story would be a lot different, and any player's story from past generations would be a lot different if they had come up in college in the NIL era. It's just where we are. And it's a natural progression regarding the growth of the game of football, but also college football specifically. So, you can't tell me, man, that the coach at Miami of Ohio can be even an ounce salty that a kid, especially a kicker, had a chance to go play at the University of Alabama in the SEC. He don't have the right to be salty about it. Move on. That's that. You know, we're humans. We're going to have emotions. But at the end of the day, like, we got to be real, man. And speaking of being real, I'm going to be real. That's all I got for this week on episode 32 of In the Jar with your boy Dupree. Why don't we have ourselves a week? I think it's T-minus 2 weeks until we got NFL football. I think we got college football today. If this episode's dropping on a Saturday, we got college football today. I think it's University of Hawaii versus Delaware State. Y'all have yourselves a week. Let's get to football season, but let's enjoy the present moment. And y'all like, comment, subscribe. You know the deal. Support the channel. Like, comment, subscribe on the video. We're trying to bring the juice every week. And we are bringing the juice every week. It's about being apes. Attitude, preparation, effort. We'll see you next week. Y'all be easy.